Welcome back to Open House with Mark Sewick and Corey James Moran, brought to you by the Mark Sewick team at Keller Williams Realty, a Greater Rochester real estate podcast. This is episode 39. Wow, we're cruising along.
We are. We're cruising along. We're getting up there.
How are you today?
I think I'm good.
It's always a great start.
I may be suffering a little bit of seasonal affect.
Okay.
Given the ice storm and the fact that it's 19 degrees out there.
You know, a lot of it probably has to do with the fact that it was over 50 for a couple days this week.
It's
the seesaw that really affects me.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, that's when it gets like really depressing, because you're like, oh, you have a taste of what it's going to be like when spring comes, and then the rug is pulled out from under us.
I'm just holding tight. We're near to the end of February, and from my perspective, actually, spring is only 30 days away.
Look at
First day of spring.
Look at that. Not a great drive into work this morning.
Well, you got quit the schlep.
45 minutes. Yeah. It's really fun to play guess where the lane is. I really enjoy that.
Actually, my next door neighbor seems to have a new plow driver who seems to have played a similar game this morning, which was where does the driveway end and the grass begin? This guy tore up the lawn. He tore up all these paving stones, took down some bushes. He was either drunk or I don't know what the hell's going on there, but man, it's a mess.
Our plow guy murdered our welcome mat. There's just like a piece of it that was cut.
What did he do? Like drive the plow onto your front porch?
So some of the snow has melted, and I'm looking at the bank that's still there, and I'm like, what is that? And I look closer, and it's the bottom left corner of our entire mat. So I don't know how that happened. Either it was the plow guy, or I don't know. There's wolverines running loose in Canandaigua.
Look at this.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
He definitely he was drunk.
But we're
no
only,
two ways about it.
We're only gonna have to deal with this for a little bit longer. We will push through.
We're getting there.
And don't worry, we have lots of uplifting things to talk about on the podcast.
Oh, do we?
Yeah. Rochester's number one in something.
We're number one.
I thought it could be a good opportunity to maybe do a little bit of recalibration when it comes to expectation setting, which is a really important thing that we talk about quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a minute since we've done that. We've got some real estate porn, and we've got a new show, apparently, that has some real estate in it that you've gotten into. Let's start with a little housekeeping here with the team. This is exciting stuff. We had our first in-person meeting on Tuesday since when?
Almost 2 years.
That's crazy.
I mean, we're what, about 44 weeks into the pandemic.
Yeah.
About 44 weeks in. Yeah.
Really long weeks.
Yeah. So it was really, really nice to see everybody back in the office again. A little bumpy. A little bumpy, but that was very, very nice. You know, another step toward normalcy, and I was thrilled by that.
So the hybrid method's going to be the game plan here. So we're going to have our executive team in for a couple of the days out of the week, and then remotely as well.
I got to say, the remote, it's interesting to see what it is that is playing out with our team in terms of remote work. And the articles that I'm reading in the Wall Street Journal or New York Times or others, what it is that we're doing is really mirroring what it is that's playing out nationally.
Okay.
And I love, the New York Times did a spread the other day on, they produced photos of men and women who are zooming in to work calls while at the same time trying to manage their children.
Yeah, that's tough. Trust me, I know that all too well.
Yeah, but I love it. I mean, you know, I see you, I see Mark Crandall, I see some of the women on the team, all juggling their kids. And one of the things I'm really incredibly proud of is every once in a while, you know, you got a kid who's crying. But then you'll see on the screen go black and you realize that one of the members of the team is breastfeeding. I am so in favor of that, and it may be a bit controversial. I'm all about it. You know, whatever it is that we can do to support the women and our team, and their childcare efforts, I'm thrilled by that.
It's nice when the kids are behaving. At least speaking for mine, when they're not, it's great. I love having Mason over my shoulder as he's yelling, trying to conduct meetings. That's always the best. But
I'm thrilled by all that.
Got to do what you got to do. So yeah, but it was nice to have people back in the office. Sorry, I missed the happy hour. I wish I could have made that.
You were with clients.
I was working. So So there's that.
It was actually also nice, really just enjoying everybody's company socially.
Right, because, I mean, obviously, we've found ways to do things remotely, and there are some benefits. There are some things that are better, I suppose. You're cutting out commute time, so there's productivity can be increased. Just based on that alone, I mean, my commute's an hour and a half a day. But there's just, I don't know, there's something to be said for being in person and the collaborative efforts that can happen and just overall connection. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's
well,
the biggest
team
thing.
Culture is so important to us and for us. And so we've done a great job these past 2 years, but we've got new members of the team, you know, several of them. And it's important for us to be in the office now so that the culture that we've created and the standards that we've created are passed on to the new members of the team and they understand what it is that we're trying to accomplish.
For sure. All right, ready to dive into some real estate.
Please.
Okay.
Yes.
Could be worse. The market update here. Let's see. At the time of recording last week, there was 263 single-family listings in Monroe County. Got a little bump up to 89.
Well, there we go.
So an increase.
Okay.
You know, that's pretty healthy. For the six-county region, we were at 501. That got a bump up as well to 531. My instinct on this is that this is the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
This may be me just rationalizing and hoping and just putting it into the universe and manifestation.
From your lips, bud. My God.
This is the beginning where things are going to start picking up. You know, we've been saying for the whole year of 2022 thus far that the weather and the Omicron variants were two of the big factors that were holding up people from listing their homes. Certainly the numbers for COVID are down, which is great. The mask mandate lifted.
Yeah.
And then, you know, weather. Well, we talked about that earlier, but soon.
Listen, I'm very competitive. In case you haven't figured that
out. What?
I'm very competitive.
No.
And I like to be number one
in
most categories.
Uh-huh.
Unfortunately, there was a recent article in Realtor.com.
Yeah.
You want to dive into that?
Yeah, we're number one. We're number one for fewest homes for sale.
So Realtor.com,
yeah.
They created a list of the 300 municipalities, largest municipalities in the country, and they figured out on a per capita basis which municipalities had the least number of properties or homes on the market for sale, and Rochester came in at number one.
Number one. Yay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was listings per 1,000 households.
Okay.
So for every 1,000 households in the Rochester area, there are two listings. Yeah. Yeah. We actually did tie. We technically tied with Elkhart, Indiana. Mark, I'm sure you've gone there to visit often.
Love Elkhart.
It's on your
they,
rotation.
You get that really nice Target there.
You know,
yeah.
Mexico, you know, Egypt, yeah, Elkhart.
Yeah. Yeah.
We only were put above them because our median list price was lower. So our median list price here in Rochester is $194,999.
Wow.
They were a little over 200. But yeah, number one, two listings per 1,000 households.
It quantifies what it is that you and I have been bemoaning for the past 2 or 3 months. I mean, every week you give me the numbers and I genuinely am shocked.
Yeah.
Every week after week after week. I mean, you said last week that 5 years ago, in the month of February, there were 2,200 homes on the market for sale.
Yeah.
Or maybe 5 years ago, January. Whatever. And currently there are 270, 260?
Yeah, what did I say? 289.
Oh, there we go. So I'm mistaken.
Yeah, I mean, and again, some of that number, it's a little bit skewed due to the fact that properties are staying on the market for split seconds. So they're not sitting
as long as
they were, but still, that's a massive,
gap.
Yeah. Just for fun, so Elkhart, Indiana was number two. Huntsville, Alabama came in at number three. Springfield, Massachusetts, number four. And Topeka, Kansas, number five for the least amount of homes for sale.
It would be great to see, and I realize that they have limited resources, it would be great to see whether or not there's some commonality that exists amongst these municipalities and why it is that there are so few homes available in some of these communities.
Yeah, I would be very curious. I mean, Springfield, Massachusetts, sort of similar probably. I mean, northeastern town.
Yeah, right, yeah.
No,
yeah.
I mean, Elkhart's in Indiana, so that's... You know,
we have nothing in common with anything that goes
Huntsville,
on.
Alabama,
in
absolutely
Huntsville,
nothing.
Huntsville, Alabama, no. Exactly.
On the other side, by the way, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina was number one. Let's see.
Oh, for the greatest number of properties in the market. And so we were at 2 per 1,000. Mm-hmm. And how many do they have?
Let me look that up real quick.
Oh, sorry.
No, I know. Put me on the spot. I'll find that one. And then
you're working with a Dell laptop, circa what, 1998. This will only take 10 minutes.
There's 40 listings.
Are there really?
For 1,000 households. So compared to our two.
20 times the number.
Yeah.
So if you take that, multiply it, man, I would take 10 times the number of properties we have on the market for sale now. Yeah,
Destin, Florida, number two. They have 35 listings per 1,000 households. Warner Robins, Georgia, 35 as well. Jacksonville, North Carolina has 34, and then another favorite of Mark's for his travel destinations, Daphne, Alabama.
Daphne.
33 households per, or 33 listings per 1,000 households. Yeah.
So, Rota.
Like you said, sometimes it's nice to be number one. Other times it's a little soul-crushing. Now, they were trying to figure out, they went into a little bit more depth as far as why is Rochester number one for fewest homes, or why is it so competitive anyway? And I guess part of it speaks back to what I just mentioned about nothing stays on the market very long around here. Apparently, back in 2021, Rochester was consistently topping Realtor.com's monthly hottest market lists. And they say a lot of this is happening because more expensive areas like Boston and New York City, the people from there have been flocking.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Which, again, was what we anticipated would be happening.
Just, and what we've experienced,
The dollar goes so much further here, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
But that, obviously, that has created just the situation we're dealing with now, which I think leads to what we're going to discuss next, and that is a little recalibration of the mindset, of the expectations when it comes to buyers.
Yeah, they have had, the team has done a great job. The team has done a very, very, very good job of metaphorically holding the hand of our clients. But I still think there's work that needs to be done. So,
yeah. I mean, brutal honesty is the name of the game these days, and unfortunately. And we don't do it to scare anyone away, but if we sugarcoat things and we say, well, you might get this or you might do this or I don't know, this, you know, hope and wish and that sort of thing, all that kind of verbiage, you're just going to keep losing.
Yeah.
And ultimately what happens after loss, after loss, after loss, it's going to be increased frustration. You know, our buyers are going to be frustrated. We're going to be frustrated as agents. And it's just you're setting up yourself as an agent. You're setting up your buyers for disappointment.
Right. You said brutal honesty. I would just throw in another descriptor. Compassionate.
Yeah, that
brutal
too.
Honesty. Because, you know, we are not interested in selling anybody the next property that comes on the market for sale. But at the same time, we want to make sure that people realize this is a journey. Mm-hmm. And this is going to take some time. And if you want to do it, you know, I guess your experience and that of others on the team, you know, we've got clients who are writing offers on 6, 7, 8 properties before they realize, I'm not going to get a deal. I'm not going to be able to purchase a property below list price. I'm going to have to pull the trigger hard and not write, you know, $2,000 over list price.
Right.
So,
and I think, you know, it's interesting too, because the more types of buyers that are in the market that are being told this of, oh, you know, just put whatever out there. In reality, it's making it harder for everyone else. The more offers that are coming in on these properties, there's more competition. And even, let's just say, for example, that someone writes an offer that's just a little bit over asking, you know, they're not going to win, but it might kick in an escalation clause for another deal that's going to bring the price up. So like that's how these things can start impacting, you know, other buyers.
Absolutely. An ideal is, you know, ideal primarily with sellers, and we're always looking for at least one more purchase, because you just never know, that next purchase offer could be the one that causes the escalation clause to kick in, and boom, suddenly you're selling a property $25,000 over asking price.
Right. Yeah. So it's really important now to set the expectation that it's, if I don't know, if someone comes to me and they say, oh, I'm looking for a great deal, I say, well, what's your definition of a deal?
Yeah. How much time do you have to wait?
Also that, exactly.
Yeah.
Because when it comes down to it, if you're looking to buy relatively soon, it's not about getting the best deal. It's about one thing, and that is winning the bid.
Right.
And doing everything that you can possibly do to win that bid. If you're a little uncomfortable with having to waive inspection, if it's a property where there's multiple offers, I'm sorry, you have no chance.
Aaron said something yesterday. We were on a Zoom call, the team and I, with one of our coaches.
Mm-hmm.
And she said something and helped me, because I might get this wrong, but she was saying that she's counseling clients that if you're willing to spend X number of dollars over list price, that's perfectly fine because the property is probably worth that.
Yep.
But then she's going on to say anything above that is not about purchasing the property at a realistic price. It's about simply securing the privilege winning the bidding war. And I think that's an important distinction, and one that I'm glad that to hear that members of the team are making. You know, you can write up to this amount of money. Anything above that, you'll probably win, you'll probably prevail, or you may win or prevail, but you're definitely paying over what you should be.
And that's
and there's desperation out there, and people are willing to do that, so long as they know
exactly
the parameters, and that's very important.
And that's the important part, is setting these expectations, especially early, that this is what you're going to have to do. And again, like you said before, sometimes it does take writing a few offers and going through it themselves and having that heartbreak of that house that they fell in love with, they envisioned being there, and they saw where all their stuff was going to be, and they're imagining their children growing up in it, not getting it. Sometimes it takes that heartbreak, you know, a few times to kind of really let it sink in. You know, it would be nice if they would just believe us from the beginning, but you know, I get it.
It's, you know, you're talking about, you know, people dropping $350,000, $400,000. So, you know, they're going to have to learn to trust you.
It's on their own time, which I totally get.
Unlike Anna Delvey. Yeah.
Mark's new obsession.
Yeah, yeah. If anybody hasn't yet seen Inventing Anna, it is, wow, it is bonkers.
Give the breakdown of this. This is the latest show.
Netflix series, nine-part series, Netflix. It stars Julia Garner, who plays Ruth in Ozark. It's a roller coaster. It's a shit show. It is just unbelievable. She plays the role of a true to life woman who makes her way to Manhattan and positions herself as a German heiress. And she goes around and she just starts bilking people, very, very sophisticated, very worldly members of Manhattan society, one after another, out of hundreds of thousands of dollars. And
of course, she's completely lying the entire time.
And she's lying the entire time. It is just fascinating. But it's also, it works in large part because it's aspirational porn is what it is.
Okay.
I mean, it's you know, you've got beautiful architecture, beautiful, I mean, you know, helicopters and private jets and yachts and, you know, remarkable clothing and great real estate. So, I think is it on your queue or is it on Court's, in Court's queue?
Mark suggested it to the team at the meeting on Tuesday. So it was on my radar already. And then I think later in the week, Courtney referenced it. We're getting through. We just actually finished. It's not a series. It's just a documentary. The Tinder Swindler.
Oh, yeah.
Have you watched that?
No, I've heard about it. Yeah.
So this one's interesting, too. So I guess they're kind of along similar lines. Mm-hmm. It's this gentleman who convinces these women that he's rich, and he is the billionaire son of some diamond kingpin, basically, and he's throwing money around like crazy. What he's actually doing is he's got a scam where he'll blow this money on these women to get them to trust and make, you know, fall in love with him, essentially, and make them think that he's a billionaire. And in reality, what he's doing is he will then say he's in some kind of scary, dangerous situation where his quote-unquote enemies are after him, and he sends photos of having been attacked.
Oh, wow, wow.
And gets them to trust him, and he says, well, my security says I can't use my credit cards because they're tracking me. I really need the money. Can you give me, you know, can you give me credit cards in your name? Can you bring me cash?
Wow.
And he's bilking these women out of hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Wow, wow.
And what he does is he takes that money and he uses it on the next woman to get her to do it.
Oh, boy.
And it's this whole,
It's a Ponzi scheme in some ways.
Yes, exactly. It's exactly what it is.
You should definitely, now that you finished that, I think that it would be an interesting contrast to start watching Inventing Anna because they are very, very similar. So
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's on the list. Any other TV suggestions?
I mean, we're in the middle of. I would not suggest Yellow Jackets.
You don't like it?
Unless cannibalism is your thing. If cannibalism is your thing, like then you know, have
at
it.
Did you make it to the end?
No, I've not yet made it to the end. So
get back to me. Circle back around.
We will slowly crawl our way.
We did. We did finish that one.
Okay.
It was weird, but different.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then finally, we started Yellowstone, which has been a cult favorite for a few years now.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, who's the lead character?
Kevin Costner.
Yeah, thank you. Well placed.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a great choice to play the lead role. He's doing a great job.
You can buy him as a rancher. It comes.
Yeah, Montana rancher. Yeah.
For sure.
So
awesome. All right. Well, you can always go to marksebook.com.
Well, that's it.
That's it. Yeah.
You got to be kidding me. Yeah. How long we've been at this for 12 minutes?
20 plus minutes.
Oh, my God. See, time just flies.
This is what happens when you're having fun.
My God. Okay.
MarkSebook.com.
Oh, hey, wait.
Yeah.
What, what about Paul McCartney?
Oh, you want to get to Paul McCartney?
Come on. Let's just talk about Paul McCartney for one second.
It's a little embarrassing for Paul.
Well, go ahead.
Okay. All right. Fine. We can do it. We can do that. Paul McCartney sold his New York apartment for $8.5 million, which probably sounds great, right? Well, he bought it for $15.5 million in 2015.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Big loss. Yeah.
Oh my God, everybody's making money in real estate and Paul's losing money.
That's what I said, I didn't want to bring it up and embarrass him.
Wow.
No, he's a listener to the podcast. Can't even get it out of my mouth. Not laughing.
And a large part of, well, thankfully he's not gonna have to pay the tax man.
That's why you wanted me to bring
it up. No, honestly, I swear to God, I did not. When I'm just sitting here, like, I had no idea wow. So where was this place located?
This is Fifth Avenue, penthouse in Fifth
where,
Avenue.
What
in New York City.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Is that where Fifth Avenue is? Thank you. What number Fifth Avenue?
I don't know the specific address. I didn't say. And then there's one other. Fine. You want to get to the other one, too?
Oh, who's the other one?
I would feel weird living here.
Oh, this is
How
is creepy.
How do you say your name again?
Gilan
Maxwell.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Epstein's confidant. Yeah, not great.
Oh, his co-conspirator, man. Yeah. She's evil.
She was,
did she lose money? Tell me she lost money. I hope she lost money.
She did list her house. I don't know if it's sold yet, for $7.259 million. It's apparently a secluded home in Massachusetts by the sea. Where she's been hiding out ever since that documentary came out.
Yeah. Cool. Secluded. I'm sure there are all sorts of reasons why. I mean, he had the secluded island.
Yeah.
He had the gated residence down in Florida.
Not great.
Her place is secluded. Like, yeah, there's a lot of seclusion going on here. And retrospect, we understand why she's evil.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
Yes. All right. Well, there we go. Now we're good.
We're good.
MarkSebook.com. That's where you can go to get all the previous podcasts. That's where the newsletter is, the blogs, our videos, our listings, of course.
Yep.
And some more stuff coming up down the pipe here.
Yeah, we got a great one coming up in Southern Parkway.
Yes.
Don't
tell anyone. We've got clients excited about that one.
That one's really great. We got a terrific one coming up in Pittsford. Beautiful, beautiful property. Hey, and a great one in Sandringham. So we got some really, really, over the course of the next few weeks, there's going to be some really great video to watch.
Excellent. All right, so make sure you check that out. I figured since we did do a little resetting of expectations, recalibration, what have you, for buyer's mindset, I wanted to, for next week, do that for the seller side.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's good, because I think there is some recalibration that needs to take place.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a couple of big things. One of the things that has become really interesting is where you start the list price and how important that is. And it's a little bit backwards sometimes how it ends up.
It is. And it's just part and parcel of that which we've been saying. This is not a market that is based on logic. It is all about emotion and... let's talk about that next week.
Yeah,
I think that's a great topic.
We'll get to that. And then, what about if a property isn't selling?
No.
How do you manage that seller's expectation?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, fun.
I'll let you know next week.
That's good. All right, thanks so much for listening. It's Open House with Mark Sebok and Corey James Moran.